So today I wanted to take a little bit of time to discuss something that is near and dear to both of our hearts, recruiting for a CS classroom. So as you may know, some of your classrooms, or all of your classrooms, look very different in terms of how many students you have, what type of students you have, what type of learners, learning types
styles,
and styles you have in your classroom. So today we wanted to take a second just to address those and maybe how you can use that to your advantage when recruiting for your own classroom. So just to get started, my name is Erin. I'm a teacher, so I used to teach high school math. I also work at CS50. This is my going on third year of the team. I'm also a dog mom of a two-year-old golden retriever and a yoga instructor. So a bunch of different hats that I wear.
Hi, everyone. I've met many of you already. My name is Veronica. I'm an incoming sophomore, a student at Harvard, and I'm a meringue lover. Meringue, the food, not the dance. Also a tree climber. I like to climb trees sometimes. And also what my friends have called a life enthusiast, because I'm very energetic and passionate sort of about everything.
All right, so CS50 sort of recruits students in many different ways. So just sort of get started, Veronica here will talk about some of the ways that Yale and Harvard specifically will sort of recruit students before they even get to campus.
Exactly. So once a student has been admitted into a college, typically they'll be invited for what we call a revisit weekend. At Harvard, it's called Visitas. At Yale, it's called Bulldog Days. So these are, again, students that have been admitted but have not yet accepted that, or may or may not have yet accepted that college. So Harvard, Visitas, we have a ton of great events. Professor Malin actually speaks. He's one of sort of the keynote speakers. And what we're trying to do there is get students excited about computer science before they even get to the college. So again, we're recruiting from the earliest stage possible. And again, we do this both at Harvard and at Yale, and this is maybe for high school students, not exactly how it would work, because in theory they'd already be in the high school. But again, what we're trying to emphasize here is that you want to get students excited about CS as early as possible. And then the next thing we have up there is activity fairs. So early on in the year, we have activity fairs, and these are sort of in the fall for incoming students, and they're sort of school-wide fairs that have everything from clubs to club sport events, and we have stands, and we are really just trying to generate excitement and de-emphasize the programming aspect of CS by sort of showing to students that CS is just as much about problem solving as it is about working with other people and coding. And then CS advising. So we have a couple of CS-specific advising fairs, specifically to our Ben and Jerry fair, so it's quite fun. It's sort of like CS and ice cream, and there are advisors available to all students, and you can just sort of sit with someone and talk about how you might go about majoring or concentrating in CS. And then we also have CS advisors available sort of throughout the year, very easily accessible via email if you want to arrange a meeting one-on-one to, again, maybe just talk through what majoring in CS would look like and how you can, you know, make that work for you.
And then, you saw yesterday, we participated in a mini puzzle day. That's actually one of our first events that students sort of partake in. It's literally the Saturday after first lecture. Yeah. And it's very much an event to sort of bring all of the students who have shopped CS50 and sort of come to class without necessarily committing to the course itself to participate in a fun collaborative event. There's pizza, drinks, different companies bring swag, and just sort of make that aspect of computer science that's really focusing on critical thinking fun and engaging for students. So do we ask students to bring their friends and people who may not typically have even thought about taking CS to sort of go to this event and be like, oh, I didn't know this was what computer science was about, and really focus on that aspect of computer science that's like not necessarily the syntax of C or Python or anything, but really how to solve a problem and how to solve a meaningful problem for me.
Yeah, and we really do have people that are non-CS majors come to this event, and it's sort of a really great opportunity to sort of like collaborate with some of your peers and sort of get to know other people that might be doing the same thing you are, but also just get to know people and just get excited about the year.
Yes, and particularly for Puzzle Day, students, especially freshmen, may not know very many people in the class. Yes. So it's a great opportunity for students to meet their classmates and sort of have their little study groups early on in the course, so that when things get more difficult, when they start learning pointers, they now have a group of people to turn to when they
get stuck. That's a key aspect. I've actually met many, many of my friends and many of my best friends, specifically taking CS50 office hours is a really great time to bond with people.
Funny story, Veronica's at office hours so much that our staff actually thought that she worked there.
Just saw her. I was a less comfy student, so I hadn't done computer science before, and going to office hours was one of the ways that I could sort of support my learning. So.
And then our last sort of culminating event for the semester is the CS50 Fair, where students sort of show off what they've been able to create. Many of them have zero computer science experience when they start, so it's sort of like this proud, accomplished moment for them to show off, hey, this is what I made in 12 weeks. And we invite people from industry, as well as other faculty members and people from the community to sort of join in and sort of get a chance to look at what these students have created and potentially recruit them for internship opportunities at their company. So those are some ways that we recruit, and many of these can sort of be applied to a high school setting. So for example, Visitas and Bulldog Days, while such a concept may not exist in your high school already, having students who have taken the course, if this is your first year, this year, and then kind of at the end of the year, using those same students to sort of go and talk to younger students about their experience is a really great way to recruit for the upcoming school year. All of you have now participated in your first Puzzle Day, so you can run a similar event in your own school, and we do provide Puzzle Day kits for all of you who want to create that, and I'll be sending out more information as that date gets closer, which will particularly be around end of August this year. The culture and the community of the course is one of the strongest aspects that we feel makes CS50 so successful. And really building that sense of belonging for students is really important in a CS classroom specifically, just because it can often come off as very intimidating. So having that sort of familiarity to your peers and the class as a whole is a very important piece of the puzzle, we think.
Yeah, it's just good to know that there are people there that want to help you, that you can sort of reach out to, and many, many times, that's your peers. So I think just really anything you can do to just generate and support community is absolutely going to benefit your students and your classroom as a whole.
Yeah. So when we talk about recruiting in the classroom, we often talk about diverse recruiting. And that has several different meanings. But in a CS context, we often think about gender, how many males or females are in your room. And it often gets thrown around that, you know, CS is a male-dominated field, and typically in a classroom, I think at Harvard we had 60-40 percent.
It was we actually had 44%.
44%
female. Highest we'd ever had, so
almost
there.
So we're always striving to find ways to make our classroom as diverse as possible, because we do feel that in a problem-setting context, as many perspectives that you can have, the better your solution is going to be, because you've thought of all of those sort of corner cases and unique paths that your problem can sort of take on as you develop a solution, the better.
Absolutely.
But indeed, there are very many different types of diversity that we may encounter in our classroom. So socioeconomic statuses. This is particularly one of the reasons why we've made the IDE available offline. For students who may not have internet access at home, we try to level the playing field as much as possible, because one of our key pillars of CS50 is accessibility.
Cultures, again, as I'm sure you've looked around the room, and I'm sure you've talked with and met many different people that have come from tons of different places. The great thing about computer science is that we really can sort of connect our world and connect different cultures, and anything that you can do in your classroom to, again, sort of support and encourage people of different cultural identities to take part in this is ultimately going to make any, you know, CS-driven feat much more successful, because, again, you're bringing together different perspectives to work on the same problem, and hopefully that's going to make the problem-solving process much better.
Yeah. And again, too, when we talk about solving meaningful problems to a student, depending on their cultures and backgrounds, that might take on a different definition. So really being able to apply CS to whatever they're interested in and whatever is important to maybe their culture or family is a really empowering sort of feeling for those students. Race and ethnicity, a very close tie to the cultures of the different students that you'll have in your classroom, as well as thinking and learning styles. So I think one of the years we had our AP workshops in San Diego, and our own, or Microsoft's Casey Champion came in, was sort of talking about diversity and recruiting. And she was telling us that if you develop problem sets for males and females to try and address the gender gap in CS, you've already sort of picked out the wrong part of the problem, because you're already sort of grouping these students into two distinct paths. So what she proposed instead was sort of creating problem sets for different types of people, different personalities, different learning styles that address the same sort of concepts and learning objectives. And by doing that, you're allowing students to have choices and options. And that is significantly more empowering than telling a female that she has to do this and a male that he has to do this. So it's just one of the ways that we can sort of address that is by creating many choices for students. And you'll find that on the AP portal. We have a plethora of problems for you to pick from for your own classroom, and even giving your students almost a menu option of different problem sets and letting them pick and choose which ones that they want to complete to achieve the same goal. And again, this is just a short list. There are very many different types of diversity that you will find in your classroom.
Wonderful. So now we're going to jump right in to an activity. We call it Think, Pair, Share, where you're going to pair up with someone and think about some of the challenges that you face when recruiting for your own CS classroom, or I guess a classroom in general.
And CS. No need to discuss a solution. We'll come back to that later.
We'll do a full circle.
Veronica and I were sort of walking around, heard some really great thoughts, and you could tell by the volume in the room that this is something that all of you are very passionate about, and obviously we have a lot of problems. But maybe today's session can help us solve some of these. We'll try and work through talking with your groups to sort of help you find strategies that may work in your own classroom. But at least from what I heard, it sounds like CS at schools that CS is not a requirement, you're often competing for students' time in terms of the electives that they want to take. So how do you really build that culture of it's something fun and enjoyable that they really want to spend their time in your classroom, as opposed to like other math classes, or even like band or orchestra or an art class or a dance class, and sort of trying to change that culture to CS is fun too, and sort of putting that into the sort of frame of CS can be applied to every field that a student wants to go into, and regardless of what career path they take, they can use the problem-solving skills that they've learned in a CS classroom.
Yeah, and some of what I heard had to do with, again, some of those differences in socioeconomic status and how those might impact how your CS classroom works in terms of, you know, if a student has just gotten a brand new laptop and, you know, the student right next to them doesn't even have internet in their own home. I also heard some great discussion about sort of how to get students that might not even be interested in CS at all. So sort of how to go over that first hurdle of maybe they're intimidated, maybe they just don't know anything about it, or maybe they think they don't like it and they just don't know that they might yet.
All right. All right, so we're gonna do a little activity for this session, and the activity is what would you do or say? So one person in your group will need a laptop, but essentially we're gonna give you certain scenarios that you might hear in your classroom or hear in your teacher workroom or something similar, and we just wanna sort of discuss how you might react or what you might say to that person if you heard that in your school. So what we're going to do is we're going to identify some solutions to these possible scenarios, and we'll sort of come back together as a group as you discuss possible solutions and sort of summarize those big ideas that you came up with. So at your table or your group, you'll sort of discuss, and then someone from your group will post the best answer or answers to the link cs50.ly/recruiting. So if you want to jot down that link or visit it now to get set up. Again, the network is Harvard Guest, and you should just be able to hit connect and be connected to the wireless that way. But you'll have approximately 8 minutes-ish to talk. I know you all had, we had some boisterous conversation earlier today, so I'm very confident that all of you have some great solutions to the problems that we'll be posing. All right, so our first what would you do scenario. All right, during a class, a student keeps asking advanced questions that aren't relevant to the course content. So they're still CS questions, they're just up and beyond what you're already talking about in your classroom. This can often come off as making the rest of the class feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know what he's talking about, or I don't know what she's talking about. And you know, that can be sort of intimidating. So how might you address that? What might you say to that individual to sort of create this culture of belonging in your classroom? All right, so we walked around and we know that there are many answers that maybe didn't appear on the board, but we heard some great things sort of walking around the room. And this group over here, Gregory and Janine, sort of were like, you gave us a perfect solution. Have something like this in your classroom where students can just pose questions that maybe aren't beneficial to the entire class, but just a curiosity that they have, and sort of using that as a demonstration. I heard some other ones have students write down their questions and come see you after class. And I feel like this is sort of an even N plus one better step than just saying, come see me after class, because it sort of validates that a student's question is important. And just to come see me after class sort of says, you may or may not remember your question, but you know, you can come see me after class. Having them write it down really makes it tangible and makes them feel like their questions are important, even if it's not important to discuss them in the class.
And I also heard a lot of great discussion about sort of what to do if other students start to feel maybe a little bit intimidated by that student's question. And let's say someone approached you after class and said, oh wow, that was kind of, you know, a little bit out of my comfort zone. You know, is this the right class for me? And sort of, again, validating that feeling, but also saying, you know, CS is, again, much more than just programming. You know, you're gonna, you know, we care about sort of what your progress is, and that sort of, you know, you can have a CS classroom with a range of CS backgrounds, and it can still really, really work. But again, validating all those students.
Let's see.
Oh, yes. So for our next question, what would you do? Students seem reluctant to work together in in-class exercises. And we've sort of left maybe the reasoning behind why they might be reluctant a little vague on purpose, because you know, students might be reluctant for a variety of different reasons, but again, sort of maybe you put a CS exercise on the board and you're noticing that maybe a group that you formed doesn't seem to be working very well together.
It could be maybe you have one person in the group who is less comfortable and they're in a group of more comfy students and they just feel like their voice isn't sort of listened to in that sort of setting. Or some other similar setting where someone in the group has ideas and has some something to say, but just doesn't feel comfortable in that group because maybe they're intimidated or something.
Yeah. So again, jump right back into some group and discuss, and then we'll reconvene. So I heard a lot of great things in this session, especially about sort of figuring out different ways to get students excited about group work. One great idea I heard was having sort of like a rotational system, a la speed dating, where at different points, different people in the group will be the leader, so that everyone sort of has that opportunity to feel empowered to sort of make decisions and voice their opinions. Aaron, what was something great you heard?
Yeah, so I was talking with Bill over here, and he was saying that finding a good balance between in-person group work and online group work sort of helps to alleviate some of the feelings of maybe intimidation, because maybe you feel more comfortable voicing your opinion online or in person, and really having that balance was helpful. Did I miss something there, Bill?
Well, I've kind of done the whole pendulum swing of teaching entirely online, took it too far, you know, because I had so many people wanting everything online. They want it all online. They want to do it on their own. And now I'm experiencing the pendulum swing back. We're all online, and they're saying, when are you going to be on campus? When can we get together in these groups? When can I do these projects? And so finding that balance can be tough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I also heard lots of great thoughts about sort of how to incorporate some friendly competition into group work to sort of get students excited. And Amir also had some great points about how to address maybe if a student sort of is dealing with, maybe is like a little bit, has low self-esteem or something, and there's sort of a little bit, something further going on, and then just sort of reaching out to that student to try to empower that student sort of one-on-one to then be able to contribute a bit more in the classroom.
Yeah.
Let's see, any other things? Make it anonymous. Find root causes, yeah. So I guess that was, that's great.
Yeah, being able to find different ways to sort of mix and match your student groups, whether it's common interests or maybe even a club that they're in, finding something that sort of ties those students together is another way of just sort of making them more comfortable. Maybe they have them in another class so they already are familiar with working with the student, could also be a potential solution. All right.
I like that pre-teaching one.
Oh, that's okay. Pre-teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're all moving, so it's hard to sort of pick
okay,
them out.
Yeah.
But this tool allows us to export all of these responses to PDFs, so I'll include that in the slide link that I, the Dropbox folder that I shared with all of you, so that you can sort of look back at these responses when you're...
So
pre-teach pair programming collaborative work skills and the industry value of
that sounds fantastic. Yeah.
So it's very rare that in a industry setting that you'll be working, you know, in your little box on your own.
Especially not in tech.
You'll likely have to collaborate with multiple people, whether someone's developing the front end, someone's doing back end. You'll eventually have to have a conversation with that person on how your two things are going to interact and sort of work with one another. So sort of stressing that with students very early on is definitely important. All right. So. This one gets every time we say it.
Yeah.
But what would you say? Your colleague says, we want diversity, but don't want to water down the content.
And for those of you who might not sort of get exactly what we mean by water down the content, it's sort of referring to the idea that you might be diluting talent, I guess, right? By having maybe a classroom with varying CS backgrounds. Oh, that's horrible. But okay, so now get into your groups and start figuring out.
What would you say to this colleague if you heard this in your teacher workroom? So we had some teachers I've heard talking about how those might be fighting words if they had heard that in their own workplace. But ultimately, I feel the sort of theme that I heard going around the room was that diversity isn't a key factor in how your students are going to be performing in your class. And indeed, your job as the teacher isn't necessarily to meet students where they are and leave them there. Right? Your job is to take them all to the same level and set those high expectations and just expect that they rise to meet it. Right? So that everyone leaving your class sort of feels like they could consider themselves more comfy.
Yeah, Felix had a great answer. He said, we're a school, so if students want to learn, we're going to teach. Which I thought was great, sort of, again, reemphasizing that even students that maybe have, you know, little or no experience, if they want to learn, and they definitely can, they can go on to do great things sort of with the right instruction and support.
Yeah, and I would even argue that maybe this colleague of yours may not even understand what CS is or how this course is being taught. So maybe inviting them to a puzzle day or one of your events that you host for your class might be a way to sort of expose them to what's really going on and how you sort of handle those different comfort levels in your own classroom.
Okay, we have another, what would you say? Your colleague says, my CS students should just tell me if I say something that offends them. And again, this is sort of like presuming like I'm not going to maybe censor my own language. I just hope that my students would come up to me if sort of I made a mistake somewhere. So now, again, go back into groups to talk about this and then we'll reconvene, try to find some solutions. What I just read up on the board that I thought was really funny is, do you tell your boss every time you get offended? So I'm not sure what group did that, but I did really like that one. That's a good one, yeah. And I also heard a lot of great comments sort of about creating a culture where students feel comfortable talking to the teacher after class if maybe there was something that was said or done that they didn't feel quite right about. Erin, what did you hear?
I mean, I think that was a theme all around, was like really building that sense of trust and community in your classroom so that if you are unaware of something that you're saying, potentially offending someone, that they have that sort of confidence to, or even just that
come
feeling that they can,
can
come up and talk to you if they're uncomfortable with that situation.
Yeah, we also heard a lot about sort of like how to give online feedback, so forms or just other like, I want to write you an email or some sort of maybe like anonymous feedback situation. Yeah, I'm seeing anonymous popping up.
Yep.
Let's see.
All right, so effective teachers build relationships.
Yeah,
like was that offensive? You know, putting that right in your students' sort of court, so to speak, where, you know, they have that comfort to go up and talk
to. No one wants to talk to the intimidator. That's also true. Wow, that's pretty.
All right. So that was sort of the last of the what would you do or says. Again, I'll generate this as a PDF and sort of include that in the Dropbox folder that I shared all of you on. But now we've sort of had this conversation. Do realize that this was just an hour-long session, right?
Yeah.
This is just the beginning of this conversation, and by no means should it end here, right? This is something that you can go back to your colleagues or even your classroom and sort of discuss and make it something that is right in front of the students' eyes so that your classroom is even transparent for them, and you can sort of see why you have the policies that you may have in your classroom or the culture that you have developed in your own class.